and hello from the campus of Carnegie Mellon University in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. We welcome you to the Software Engineering Institute's webinar series. Our presentation today is What DevOps Is Not, and we'd like to thank you for attending. Depending on your location, we want to wish you a good morning, good afternoon, or good evening. My name is Shane McGraw. I'll be your moderator for today, and again, I'd like to thank you for attending. We want to make today as interactive as possible, so we will address questions throughout the presentation and again at the end of the presentation. You can submit your questions to our event staff at any time by using the Questions tab on your control panel. We will also ask a few polling questions throughout the presentation, and they will appear as a pop-up window on your screen. Our first polling question is, how did you hear about today's webinar? Another three tabs I'd like to point out are the Files, Twitter, and Survey tabs. The Files tab has a PDF copy of today's presentation slides, along with other DevOps work, other DevOps related work from the SEI. The Survey tab, we request that you fill out at the end of the presentation, as your feedback is always greatly appreciated. For those of you using Twitter, be sure to follow at SEI News and use the hashtag SEI DevOps. Once again, be sure to follow at SEI News, and the hashtag for today is SEI DevOps. Now I'd like to introduce our presenters for today. Hassan Yassar is the Technical Manager of the Secure Lifecycle Solutions Group in the CERT division of the SEI. Hassan leads an engineering group on software development processes and methodologies, specifically on DevOps and development, and researches advanced image analysis, cloud technologies, and big data problems while providing expertise and guidance to SEI clients. Hassan has more than 25 years' experience as a senior software engineer, software architect, and manager of in all phases of software development and information modeling processes. Constantine Aaron Kois has been developing software for over 17 years and received his MS and PhD from the University of Pittsburgh for work developing novel systems and algorithms for medical image analysis. His doctoral research involved developing frameworks, algorithms, and data structures to efficiently perform complex statistical calculations on large amounts of data. His background in machine learning and complex systems, combined with his passion for web-based technologies, led him to work on developing complex software systems for numerous organizations, including UPMC and Carnegie Mellon University's Software Engineering Institute. Now I'd like to turn it over to Aaron Kois. Welcome, Aaron, all yours.
Thank you, Shane. So today we wanted to talk about a topic that a lot of you have probably heard a lot about in the last few years, and it's DevOps. We've heard a number of different definitions of DevOps, some of them conflicting in ways. So we thought we'd take a different approach to it today and talk about what DevOps is not, some common misconceptions we hear about the concept of implementing DevOps within organizations or teams. So the first thing, the first most common misconception that I hear is that DevOps is a fad. DevOps is actually something that's been around for a while and is really providing a lot of value to organizations. A lot of people seem to think that maybe DevOps is something that can work for organizations out in the valley doing continuous deployment, organizations that are operating in a very fast and agile manner, maybe not enterprise ready. Maybe not ready for business in that way. But a survey in 2014 from Puppet Labs and ThoughtWorks showed that organizations that are adopting DevOps now are deploying 30 times more frequently with 50% fewer failures. Those numbers are hard to ignore. And those numbers mean that DevOps is going to be here to stay, and we're going to see more of it in years to come. The second misconception we're going to talk about today is that DevOps is a new thing, a concept that is absolutely new to the field, and it's maybe not tried and true, tried and tested. That's fundamentally not true as well. DevOps is actually highly related to agile development processes. So as we can see, agile introduced the concept that we need to iterate in software development, that we need to move through our cycles in an iterative fashion, that we need to have incremental changes and adapt, react to change quickly and flexibly to make sure that we hit our targets correctly. Basically, agile said that just doing our planning and then completing planning, moving on to development, completing development, moving on to testing, that waterfall model wasn't going to work because we were going to learn more things as we went on through the software development lifecycle. And those things we learned needed to be adapted to and embedded into our development process to make sure that we changed to meet the changing requirements of our software system. So if you think of that kind of thinking, think of what the Agile methodology brought to us and brought to software development. Agile's concept was to embrace constant change. It was to embrace the fact that the requirements will change, that the development team and the customers will learn more about the requirements for the software system as they move forward. So in order to do that, methodologies like Scrum employed something called a product manager. The concept was to take the expert in customer needs, the expert in requirements, and embed them in the development team as, say, a product manager, to be there to provide real-time instant feedback on those concepts. If developers had to make a decision that may impact requirements, or if they tried out prototyping a specific feature, they could immediately turn to the customer expert and say, hey, does this meet your needs? Does this make sense with what the customer's needs are, what the business needs are, etc.? And the customer could immediately answer. Then the developer could have that real-time feedback and move in the right direction without having to wait for an answer, without having to do unnecessary work, and then undo it when that feedback came in later. So this increased the flexibility of the development lifecycle and also increased the pace, allowing more features to be developed more quickly because that feedback was continuous. Well, when DevOps came on the scene, the primary idea was remarkably similar: to embrace constant delivery, to embrace testing, to embrace operations. The idea was that info about operations, that expertise about the needs of the production environment, the needs of the customers with regards to actually serving an application in production and delivering features to users, that expertise was within the staff that maintained the production systems. That was in the operations team. So the DevOps answer to that was to embed operations into the development process. Take expert from the operations team and put them into the product team. Make them involved in every decision so that at any point in time, developers could turn to them and ask, will this impact production? Will this impact deployment? Will this impact delivery? And again, real-time feedback could be injected into the development process to make sure that development didn't go awry, that it was always consistent and tracked towards operational realities and operational needs. So really, DevOps is just an extension of Agile thinking applied to operations and sustainment, and also, as we'll see, applied to business needs and business requirements on the far end. Hassan, do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, actually, I have a couple of things to say about the business requirements. So the business people, when they're involved in the development process, they would like to get some type of like hands-on and then get ideas and then and also direct the developers and see where it goes, all the deliverables. And DevOps is going to enable that type of things during the throughout the process because DevOps is going to give them enablers, give them a platform. The business folks can get into the development process, give them their feedbacks, and get the developers based on their needs and based on requirements and give them a right guidance. So one of the Agile principles says that the business folks has to be part of the development process. To make that happen, DevOps is making a big chance, big enablers, so that the business folks can be part of it. The other things also, as you mentioned, that the customers can be part of that development process. How is that possible? During the Agile process, it's really hard to get IT enable that environments and customer give some feedback. Customers see what's really going on, what the release so far has been done. They can give the right feedback to developers. So DevOps is enabled that again, and the customer can give the right feedbacks right away, and also the operational team and get able to get it passed into the developers. That makes much easier for the customers. It makes much easier for developers because they know what they're thinking about it.
Okay, so we're going to do a polling question. Folks, we are aware there was a technical issue at the start of the event where I think we missed the first two slides of what Aaron went over. So we are going to, Aaron, unless you can recap maybe quickly what you kicked off with, and then we can go back into this polling question. But I know time's an issue to get through everything, but there was a technical issue that a lot of our audience couldn't see the speakers, couldn't hear audio. So can you give us just a quick recap what was started at first, and then we'll...
Sure, no problem. So yeah. In the first few slides, what we were putting forth is the first misconception about DevOps, that misconception being that it's a fad, that it's a flash-in-the-pan concept, when, in fact, recent surveys from Puppet Labs and ThoughtWorks, industry leaders in the field, showed that organizations employing DevOps are deploying 30 times more often with 50% less failure. So those kind of numbers are really hard to ignore. They show a massive amount of business value and show that DevOps is here to stay and cannot be ignored.
Okay, so we're going to bypass this polling question, the issue of time. We'll get moving on, and then if we have time at the end of the presentation, we can maybe give more examples of Agile and stuff. So
that's no problem. So the third misconception we wanted to talk about is the relationship between DevOps and tools. A lot of people, and now that the industry is growing up, there's a lot of work in the space developing great tools for DevOps, and we don't want to take away from that. But there is a common misconception that DevOps is just tooling, that it is all about adding tools, adding automation to your workflow, adding automation to your teams, and that is going to bring DevOps to your organization. And the reality is that DevOps is not about tools. Tools can help, but it is not fundamentally about tools, and tools do not make the DevOps. DevOps is fundamentally built on a foundation of a focus on business needs, shared goals between all members of your organization. Everybody working in any way on a software product should be focused on the same set of goals, which is getting that software product out into the hands of users and providing value to your business. If everybody doesn't have the same set of goals, you have risk. And collaboration between all those units. Once they have shared goals, they can collaborate easily and organically to meet those business needs. Those are the three concepts that are at the foundation of DevOps. And insofar as tools can help, tools are great, but just bringing in tools will not create DevOps in your organization. What you can see here on this slide is a basic model of the types of tools we might see in a DevOps environment. And again, we're not trying to say that tools cannot be extremely beneficial to an organization, but what's more important in these slots that you see on my generalized model of DevOps tooling here is not the specific tools that go into each of those compartments, but the lines connecting them, which shows interaction. These tools need to be there purposefully, they need to be driving your organizational goals, and they need to be interacting in a way so as to establish transparency and communication throughout your process and throughout your organization. Redundant tooling is one of the things that we tend to see a lot in organizations, and this can actually be worse than having no tooling at all because it breaks down collaboration and shared goals. If different departments, different teams in your organization are using different tools to accomplish the same task, different tools that can't communicate with each other and can't share data. Hassan, do you have any experience to add?
I have a lot of experience, actually, based on my 20 years of experience. What I see so far, especially for enterprise companies, if you look at the or large-scale development things, and everybody is really focusing within that organization, you know, as the for and having their own development tools or even their own tool sets. However, they're not sharing the information between them. Like an example, if they're going to share the code throughout the email, it is not a good way to share the email because the code in the through email, they should have some sort of a code repository platform they can share the code to each other. The other things also we see that, and when they are communicating to the business folks, like looking for the project management type things, looking for the tracker, looking for the deployment, looking for any deliverables, if the project manager has different tools and developers have different tools, if they're not talking to each other, basically are wasting of time, and people are developers are entering in two places, or the project manager is coming talking with developers, where's the status of the application. So it's creating a lot of time-consuming throughout the business organizations. Then I would like to say other things as well. As a cultural, I think DevOps is really keeping the culture first, and tooling is needed, but it's not the first priority. The first priority is really people, which is the team, and also the cultural things. Tool is going to come after that. If you put the prioritization tool first, you're going to lose the focus because tool is going to help. If anybody is going to use the tool, it's going to help. Otherwise, if nobody's going to use the tool, if not sharing each other, tool is going to be something that stays by itself, which is going to solve the problem, basically.
Okay, which is going to lead us to a quick polling question. And the purpose of these polling questions, folks, is to get you an idea, make sure you have an understanding before we proceed to the next question. So that the polling question we'd like to ask now is, would you like more information on shared goals in DevOps? And while you're voting, we can continue and we'll come back to the results.
Now, Hassan, you brought up a great point about a common bad scenario that we see. So the example you used was a project management team needing a specific type of reporting, needing some specific data to then pass up to their management, pass up to the C-suite, and introducing a new tool to the developers, telling them to input information in there so that they could get the reporting they needed. Now, this is a common scenario, and this is a logical thing to see, right? Project management needs some specific information, needs reporting in a specific format to provide business value. Reporting does provide business value, but developers have their own tools to deal with that sort of thing. Issue trackers and time trackers, commit logs, these are all very common tools that developers are already going to be using to track their work, to track their tasks. So by introducing a new tool, now we've just increased the burden on the developers. We have increased the overhead and added a new potential source of user error because that information is being input independently into two separate systems and may be inconsistent. We don't have any way of tracking that. So I would say that the DevOps solution to that problem, the right way to do it, is to have the project management team come to the developers, discuss their needs, and say, hey, we need data in this reporting format. We need these type of reports to pass up to the executives to let them know status and to, you know, provide value to the business, and work with the developers to create some type of system that exports data from their existing tool set and puts it into the reporting format the project managers need. That way you don't have that redundancy. Does that...
That's perfectly makes sense, because if you share the tools and if you get enough to pick the right tools together and sharing across the tool, that's the philosophy of the DevOps, because DevOps is really forcing the sharing, right? If you're going to share, if you're going to use a similar tool set, then you can communicate that. If I'm communicating something different, if you're communicating something different, if tool is really forcing to really deviate us what we are talking, that means we're not in the sync, basically.
Right.
I'm going to spend my time, you're going to spend your time, so end of the day, we're losing both time. But really, goal is get together in the same platform, whatever we are using it, let them talk to each other, which is, again, the communication we are talking about. It's all the communications. DevOps is going to give them a communication. DevOps give them some sort of like using collaboration between the tools. Tools will be the second priority. It's completely agree with you.
Right. And again, think of what, in that kind of example, what enabled that good solution. It was the project managers going and interacting with the developers, them having shared goals, and them communicating and collaborating to come up with a better concise solution to the problem. And that's really at the heart of this, that communication, that collaboration.
Okay, and back to our polling result, about 75% was looking for more information on shared goals.
Okay, so we're going to try to hit that point as much as we can throughout the rest of this talk then, because there is a lot to speak about when we talk about shared goals. But, you know, one of the things...
Actually, I'm glad to hear that they're having a shared goals, because shared goals are going to help us to really the main focus of the DevOps, because we have the shared goals means the share of the goals is the business aspect of it, it's a quality aspect of it, there's a secret aspect, there's a lot of things we can talk about it. As long as if the shared goals across the project team members, as virtual DevOps team members, it's going to create a lot of good things and makes the project successful. Glad to hear that.
Right. One of the things that comes to mind for me as a developer when I think about shared goals is I think about, you know, how often do we have a situation where my development team, we're working, we're writing code, we're building a great system, and we build it, we test it, we're ready to go, and we hand it off to the production team, to the release team, to the operations team, and then we go out and celebrate because we did our job. That was our goal, that was our deadline to create the system and test it and have it ready. And right there, that concept, and we've all been there, the developers are done, they have done their job, they've proven that they've met the requirements, and then they hand it off to operations. I should not be able to end my work right there. We're losing shared goals by my development team ending our work there because the business hasn't gotten value out of our work yet. The business doesn't get value until it's functioning. My software is functioning in production, being used by users. That's what generates value and revenue for the business. So right there, we see that my goal as a software developer, in a lot of points in my career, was not the same as the goal of operations and was not the same as the goal of the business. And that's really what we mean when we talk about shared goals.
I agree.
Quick audience question, just because I know you touched on this at the beginning when we were having some issues, but Chitra, I would like to know how DevOps is different from an agile framework.
So that's a great question. Briefly, I think that DevOps really takes the concepts of agile and applies it to other areas of the SDLC. So agile really focuses on the development process, on requirements, on integrating the customer into the agile framework. In some cases, integrating business, but that's been something that agile methodologies have had a hard time doing, is getting business folks involved in the process as well. DevOps expands into sustainment, expands back into business, into security, legal, and talks about identifying what the expertise you need, what the quality attributes you need within your system are, and getting that expertise embedded. And then, of course, adds the layers of automation on top of that to smooth out the process.
I would like to add a couple other things as well. So when we talk about Agile, we said DevOps is the extension of Agile. It's not really a different thing from Agile. It is extension. So why that DevOps came into the reality, it's kind of like a technology is forcing us to use the DevOps methodologies, because if we talk about the Agile principles, it is looking for getting customer engagements, getting business engagement. These are the manifestos, like one of the 12 principles of Agile. If you think about how can we get the customer involved into the Agile process, or get how business involved Agile process, it cannot be a pen and paper. It has to be some sort of automated way to get the customers or getting a business analyst or other stakeholders in the project development cycle so they can really get their inputs as throughout the process. To do that things, DevOps is going to help them, because DevOps is automating the process. DevOps is helping the customers get into the development right away, not really sitting in the meetings and daily Scrum meetings or daily stand-ups or the iterations. So, but having a DevOps in mind, it's going to create a lot of interaction between the developers, analysts, operational teams together, so they can be the same towards the goal. So it's not a different, it's really an extension of the work. It's kind of like a forcing. And the other things we have to talk about as well, like new generations, technology, it is the web developments or the micro-scale architectural type of things. It is really forcing, have a modular approach. That means we have to have a continuous deployment. That means you have to be get customer response as quickly as possible, get the user response and feedback as quickly as possible, so you can get your business increase, because it's kind of like a race against other companies. So if you miss that race, there's a little hard to get catch up later on.
Right, and I think we'll talk a lot more about concepts touching on that as we go forward. So the next misconception, what DevOps is not. DevOps is not a product. There will be a lot of companies coming up that may try to sell you DevOps. And some people may be enticed to try to just buy a product, push it into their environment and say, all right, now we have DevOps, or even hire someone, and that's hiring DevOps. But DevOps isn't really a product. It's not something that you can buy. DevOps is fundamentally about culture and about the quality of your application. And by quality, I mean the specific software engineering term of quality, of different quality attributes. What matters to you? What do you need? Do you need high scalability? Do you need high resiliency? Do you need high usability? Different projects, different companies focus on different levels of quality to meet their market needs. But DevOps is about that, and it's about the culture within your organization, the collaborative culture, the communication culture. It's about getting experts in whatever quality you need. If it's maintainability and deployability, that's getting your ops group embedded in your projects. And it's bringing them in as full, engaged members of the project team, giving them ownership of the project just as the devs have ownership, not just bringing in an ops engineer to consult, you know, every few months on the project to make sure it's going in the right place, because that doesn't give you the real-time feedback that we're looking for. Ops has to be there to answer any questions or to speak up when a feature is being discussed that the developers won't even know is going to impact production, to speak up and say, hey, that will impact production, because our environment is like this, don't go down that path. That is the kind of real-time feedback that is going to keep development on track and is going to give you the benefits of speed and efficiency and effectiveness that DevOps promises. So what you really have to ask yourself when you're talking about DevOps, again, it's not about a product. It's about what you know and how your company is structured, how your team works together. So one of the questions I like to ask is, does your development team know exactly what actual production looks like? I mean, exactly. Can they tell you what production looks like? Because if they can't, if they don't know what production looks like, how can they design software for it? How can they make sure the product that they put out is going to meet the business needs, is going to work in production for users? It's obvious, but it's also a very common disconnect. Hassan, do you want to go through some of the more of these?
Actually, we have a lot of things we can cover up on the way, because now we can talk about all the siloed stuff and we can talk about other topics, which is the operational teams, how they can get together, how the other team can together, so we can add more on down the road. Is there any question, Sean?
There is. One from Christopher asking, do you feel there's an intersection between continuous integration and DevOps?
I can try that, because absolutely. Continuous integration is a fundamental piece of the DevOps puzzle. It is your gatekeeper. And we'll talk a little bit more about this in a later part of this presentation, but I think continuous integration is absolutely pivotal in reinforcing the types of quality that you want to achieve. Continuous integration is what's going to enforce the rules that you want on your product before it goes forward into staging or into production. So, and this is going to be customized to what your business needs. Again, what type of quality do you need? But it's a very, very important means of measurement and also of enforcement of your process and of your DevOps.
And can we squeeze in one more just while we're in this section from Matt, who's asking, how is DevOps done in a regulated industry like biotech, which is risk-averse space?
So that's a very interesting question. That's a common question, is when you get into an industry that's biotech is one, financial is another, heavily, heavily regulated, how do you deal with DevOps? Well, a lot of the concepts and why we say that you really have to focus on culture and on your process rather than on specific tools or specific technologies is partly for that reason, right? However you achieve the types of communication and collaboration that are the hallmark of what DevOps is what's going to work for you. Obviously, I will achieve those goals differently in a small Silicon Valley web startup than I might in a highly regulated biotech company. But the goal should be the same, identifying what your business needs, trying to find where the bottlenecks are in getting my work through my process and into production, and then seeing ways to remove those bottlenecks to get things through faster and to make sure that all the information, all the expertise is known early in the process. So in a regulated industry, I would say that one of your most important stakeholder expertise sets is legal, right?
I think it's going to DevOps really help them a lot, because if they use as expertise in development cycles, like bank industries or the biomedical or any other industries, if they have the quality attributes or the goals they define at the beginning, so developers know what they're dealing about it instead of going at them and changing. And one of the things we should remember, that DevOps is really changing the thinking and get everybody's involved and during the life cycle, the project life cycle. So if you think about that one, really a quality attribute add into your development cycles. So it can be like compliance check. It can be another privacy act. It can be another quality attribute. So that can be part of the overall process, which is DevOps is helping them, because DevOps mentality says, get expert into the project team.
Right. So in that project case, it's your regulatory affairs professionals,
absolutely.
Right?
It's going to give them a lot, there. Actually. That's one of the things they should involve, instead of having a silo, instead of legal aspect or the other stakeholders they're going to do by themselves and give them some sort of like a guidelines. But developers, instead of spending time to read everything else, but if somebody is going to be in that meetings during the development cycles, they will have a lot of input during the development process. And then end of that, everybody is going to address the needs during the process, including the integration, including deployment. There's many ways to step in the process why they can address their needs throughout the process, basically. It's really helping DevOps.
Right, exactly. It may look different, but it's still DevOps.
Absolutely.
Getting those regulatory
Absolutely.
Professionals in there early, making sure you meet your regulatory needs,
right.
It is fundamental to your business in a regulated yeah. environment. So the next thing, moving on, that DevOps is not. DevOps is not a one-size-fits-all solution. DevOps needs to be customized to your organization to meet your needs. And we've touched on this a little bit before. And the question about continuous integration was, greatly foreshadowing of this, right? How I organize my process, how I implement DevOps in my organization needs to be specific to what my organization's needs are. So as a small example, and CI is one of my great go-to technologies for this, if something that's very important to my organization for whatever reason that provides my business value is that I want high code coverage, high code test coverage. Sorry, if I want 90% test coverage and I want to ensure that I am keeping that level of quality throughout my entire process, well, then I'm going to configure my continuous integration server to fail the build anytime code coverage isn't met. All my other tests can pass. My software can build, it can work, but if test coverage isn't there, that's important to my business. The build fails, developers have to go back and make sure that they meet that goal. It's a way of incentivizing, it's behavioral economics. If performance is important, if we need a highly scalable storage solution, and we need to make sure that all of our database queries are happening in a highly performant way, test that in continuous integration. Fail the build if the performance isn't up to snuff. Again, code could compile, tests don't pass. But what quality is important? What does it mean before I will release something into staging?
Right. other things actually we can add on top of quality. If the organization is really a small organization and or a project size is small, they don't need to deploy every minute or every hour. They can set the cycles, they can set the project expectation, they can they know the user needs. So instead of modeling how Amazon does, how other companies does, they can define something for their own business needs. So they can really deploy, depends on user base, depends on their critical needs. So instead of really modeling exactly, I had to do 10 times in a day. No, you don't need to 10 to 10 times a day. You have to have maybe a month, maybe a, what, twice a year, as long as what the business needs, your needs. So that then you can define your process, basically.
Right. I mean, so that's the fundamental question. What does quality mean to your organization? What bar do you need to achieve? And then model your DevOps based on that. So another thing that DevOps is not, and this is a fundamental principle that, that DevOps is trying to bring to software development. DevOps is not siloed. Many organizations are going to look something like this, right? We've all been in organizations, many of us probably still are in organizations, where you see a development department, an operations department, a quality assurance department, a department full of business analysts, and these are silos within the organization. DevOps is fundamentally working against silos, trying to break those silos down because those silos impact the things that we've been talking about. They're going to inhibit communication and inhibit collaboration. We're not saying that we want to break down the entire organizational structure and make every organization a flat organization, redefine everything, you know, wipe out the management chains. All we're saying is that these siloed departments need to have free and open communication between them. They need to be brought together to have visibility between their internal operations so that all of the staff members can organically and easily collaborate between each other. I know for myself, some of the best teams I've worked on, some of the best projects I've seen have been great because it just so happened that the developers and the operations staff and the quality assurance staff that were working on those projects knew each other and trusted each other and just naturally went to each other with questions to sort out issues without having to be ordered from their management chain to do so and run up through the management chain and back down to get answers. They just organically worked together, and that made things happen faster and more efficiently. Have you seen similar things?
I see a lot of things, actually, especially in the enterprise or the government organization. There's a lot of bureaucracies, right? Bureaucracy is a management chain. If the QA people are not able to communicate with developers on a regular basis, or the business analysts, they have their own process and methodologies, they have to connect with the developers. It's really creating a lot of siloed environments. The DevOps is going to tell them, hey, bring together and share the same goals. Goal is always the business needs. So as long as if they share the goals, and then that's the things we're going to get together and break all the siloed environments so they can really work as a group together and share their feedbacks.
Right, and it brings that real-time feedback in, like you
that's,
just said.
That's a critical point.
Real-time feedback. If I have to ask a question of my operations unit, and that requires me to pass that question up to my manager, who passes it over to the manager of the operations unit, who passes it down to the appropriate operations staffer, and then the answer comes back up through that path, that takes a long time. That takes days, in some organizations, maybe even weeks, for me to get a simple answer. Well, what happened in that time? I may have not been able to work on that feature because I really needed that answer, or I may have gone down a path that was misguided because I didn't have the feedback that I needed, right? As a developer, that has wasted time in one way or another. Now, what does that do over the course of the project? Well, those bits of wasted time add up, and they slow our feature development. Now, this concept of silos, and we see in a lot of organizations, and interesting note, let's just take a quick look at the waterfall methodology, the methodology that Agile has been trying to reduce in operations. So waterfall says we go from requirements, we do all the requirements, then we go to design, do all the design, finish it, then we go to implementation, we never go backwards, no changes, no adjustments, then we go to verification, then we go to maintenance. Well, this process, if you lay on top of it organizational silos, you can see where the influence came from. Waterfall methodologies reinforced the way that silos have been determined and constructed within our organization. So in fact, a siloed organization that doesn't have good communication and collaboration flow between their groups is actually going to be highly aligned with the waterfall methodology. They're going to have problems implementing Agile and more problems implementing DevOps. The communication structure can be highly defined by the organizational structure. So it is up to us in our organizations to try to impact that culture, to try to break down these barriers. And again, we're not saying that you don't still have separate departments and reporting chains, but to try to make a free flow of information and communication to get away from waterfall methodologies. One of the other things that we like to talk about as far as DevOps is concerned, and a misconception we see in a lot of our clients, is that DevOps is an organizational unit, that DevOps is a role. So at this point, I'm going to turn it over to Shane for a quick polling question to get where you guys stand on that.
Okay, our next polling question we want to like to know is, do you think DevOps engineer is a valid role? And while we give the audience a minute or two or 30 seconds to vote, we can throw in a question here real quick?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Great. Leslie wanted to know, how does DevOps embrace the integration of large projects, in particular projects involving hardware? It seems as if Agile does not embrace this.
Actually, my background is EE, electronics engineers. It's really a challenging topic, getting your hardware included into the software development process. So if you look at for the software development, is a lot of microarchitectural things can be modular. However, maybe 20 years ago, it was really difficult to get the hardware as part of the development process. In these technologies, it's really getting easier and easier. So like one example is really you can get the hardware put in a simulated platform. If you know what's the in and out, there is no any hardware standing working by itself. It is looking at some sort of software integration, including firmware, including other API sets, including other communication portal stuff. So as long as the hardware unit is defined as the simulated module as by itself is self-contained, DevOps can help up either, because if the self-contained, hardware is going to be part of as a software. So if the hardware guys know what's in and out, while they were working in improving the quality or improving other hardware design and everything else in the backend, but if the software guys know what is the interaction between the hardware unit, so they can really get talk and then they can see each other, they can really get integrated much quicker than versus waiting the hardware ready and prototype ready, so they can get the prototype and the firm is going to be push it to the prototype, then do another testing. So if the hardware is defined as a simulated platform or overall is, it's much easier to get involved at the early stage, which is it's possible actually. So think about is how can I do the simulated platform wide hardware unit as a simulator so I can really integrate each other. That's a key point.
Right. I agree completely. It's about simulation and again about real-time collaboration. So having that simulation platform and then enabling real-time collaboration between your hardware and your software folks, if the hardware people, as they're implementing new features, can immediately update the simulation platform, then you have that real-time back and forth.
So
and you're
going
move
back
forward.
To the same thing, like changing the cultural things, actually. Changing the culture, changing thought philosophies. I don't want to get just my hardware engineer. I'm touching some software, but software engineering is also doing some software development. So if they're going to get together and talk, if hardware engineers know what is my input and output, for just a basic definition, so if they're able to simulate some of the hardware component, then software guys can interact each other.
Right.
So
I think that simulation provides the interface for them to collaborate and communicate on, and that's what you're looking for. And, you know, again, to reinforce that point, when we say communication and collaboration, you know, we don't just mean everybody always has to be in meetings together. We mean the opposite. It's finding those ways to collaborate in their technical work, which is the simulation platform.
Basically sharing. So a typical way, like I remember a long time ago when I started the first time the hardware development, it is just waiting for the last minute type of things. I have to get my prototype. It will take maybe 6 months, maybe a year. And during that time, software is thinking, oh, it's going to work out. When we get together, put the firmware, and the hardware guy is looking for what is the other operational needs, it's going to create more problem. So if I know at the early stage as a hardware engineer, I can say, okay, I'm looking for some device. It's working such and such conditions, power requirements, operation requirements, and I can write the software based on the hardware requirements, which I should know at the beginning, not at the end. So thinking is really bring all together as early as possible. That's one of the philosophy, which is great for the hardware platform as well, which is, and technology is making much easier right now. If you look at for any circuit design application, they have a simulated platform. You can simulate that. If you look at the mobile platform, there is an emulator. You can get emulator. You don't need the hardware right away. Get emulator, put in your machine, and then you can emulate what the hardware is going to react at. So there is a certain way. It's not really 100% is compatible, but a certain way to do that. Just changing the thought philosophy, changing the cultural things makes much easier.
Right. You're not going to get away from real hardware testing for acceptance, but you can iterate on that simulation platform and keep it as close to reality as possible.
Correct.
Great. So we'll share the results here now. And I believe by the last I saw it was 51 to 49% that
yes was the, or so, actually it's 50-50. We had 122 responses and a 50-50 straight down the middle.
So that's exactly what we expected. This is a hot topic, right? And there's a lot of diverging thoughts on this concept. And if you hit a job board now, I guarantee you will pull up a ton of roles that are DevOps engineer. Now, here's what's interesting. Read through those roles and try to decide what the actual background is for a DevOps engineer role. In some cases, it'll read just like a sysadmin that knows how to do a little bit of software. In some cases, it'll read like a developer plus a sysadmin. In some cases, it'll read like a developer that knows how to do a little scripting. So fundamentally, when we talk about DevOps being an organizational unit, I think that that is a misstep. I think that that is a worry, because effectively, you're looking at that same siloed model here up on the screen and replacing your ops silo with a DevOps silo. If you're just hiring people called DevOps engineer instead of operations engineer or system administrator, you're not actually changing your organization's culture. You're just maybe expanding the role you expect certain people to play. And we're seeing a lot of pushback in the developer community about developers being convinced that DevOps is just trying to get them to do two people's jobs, to do a dev's job and an ops staff's job. And that's dangerous too, because those are full-time, high-expertise professions. You can't expect somebody to be an expert in both of those things. One of those things is going to fall by the wayside. So I would be a little worried if you start to see DevOps, if you start to think about hiring a DevOps engineer and don't have a solid idea as to what the role you want that person to play is. I would say the better phrasing is to talk about a developer that is comfortable and experienced operating in a DevOps environment. You know, the environment is the thing that is DevOps. Or a system administrator, an operational engineer that is comfortable operating in a DevOps environment.
We'll keep talking. We don't want to create a silo. If you're going to create a DevOps as a silo, as another team or an engineering group, we are creating another silo. We are against that, actually. We are saying we should have expertise together that knows enough. They can give this. They can get idea for other team members instead of really creating a separate unit as a DevOps unit.
Right.
And then creating another silo, which is not good, again, for DevOps principles.
Because, again, DevOps practices is about every stakeholder, about dev and ops and information security and QA. So they should all know how to work in a DevOps environment. So all of them get that tag or nobody does, you know?
So we'll roll out the question here we just got from Ali saying, wouldn't DevOps increase costs?
Well, it depends on where your costs are coming from. So implemented correctly and efficiently, what DevOps is supposed to do is increase the feedback throughout your life cycle. So I guess my question would be, where do you see those costs coming in from? A lot of people think that, well, I have to hire a new department called the DevOps department. Okay, if you hired a new silo, that would increase costs, but that's not what we're thinking that you should do. The other thing they think is, well, my operations engineers have to be embedded in the project full-time all the time, so they can't do other operations work, so I'm going to hire a lot more operations engineers because I have more developers than I have operations. That also can cause you some cost increases, but isn't necessarily the way that you need to go. What we really need is high levels of transparency. You know, when we say DevOps means that the ops engineers have to be high-impact members of the project team, they have to be fully engaged in the project, we don't mean that they have to be sitting next to the developers every moment of every day, in every meeting, doing nothing else with their day. We mean they have to have high visibility into the project and know what's going on. I have seen scenarios, and this is just a small example, where infrastructure staff over the weekend, upgrading a network, something like that, made some network change that broke all the builds of my development team. 20-something builds just failed. And my developers come in on Monday, and they see that all the builds are broken, and they spend, you know, 3 or 4 hours trying to figure out what caused that, eventually track it down to a network change that hadn't been there on Friday, and then go and contact the infrastructure team and say, well, what happened, and get that remediated. The reason that was able to happen is because of a lack of transparency. Now, those infrastructure engineers making that network change did not have to be on any of those project teams to know those projects. But if they had been tapped in to our continuous integration server and they had seen that the minute they made a certain networking change, 1 minute later, 20 project builds fail out of the blue, they wouldn't have to know anything about those projects to know, hey, maybe this networking change caused this problem. If they had full visibility into all of the operations, including the development operations, the DevOps operations of the company, they could have seen that, engaged their expertise, fixed that problem before it started, and we wouldn't have had that wasteful cycle. So we're really just talking about transparency, and I think when you do it right, you reduce a lot of that waste and a lot of that waiting for feedback, and you're going to decrease costs.
Right. Actually, it's a long run. DevOps is saving money. There is no extra cost. It's a saving money. One of the things for DevOps makes easier for the continuous deployment, which we're going to talk about it. So when you deploy, and then if you're able to roll back your changes, so think about how much, if you're not able to roll back your changes, how much money you're going to lose in the business. How much time are you going to lose for the defect and look for what happened? If you have a DevOps model implemented, it's going to save the time and money, which you can go back easily, you can fix easily, you know what happened, you can get a decision maker as early stage, then saving the money long run. Maybe a ramp-up costs happen because it depends on tools, maybe depends on some learning curve.
It's always a learning curve.
It's only a learning curve, but once you start a learning curve as a team together, it's going to save the money down the road. I guess we can go to the next. It's a nice segue for the, we are talking about almost like DevOps and all those things, but it's not the only the operation and the DevOps development together. It's more than that. If you look at for the typical software development life cycles, there are a lot of other teams also involved in the SDLC or the team-wise, like marketing analysis team, architecture design, developers, quality assurance people, and IT operations. So if you look at in detail, and as group-wise group, if they're going to share the any artifacts between the group by group or team by team, there's a lot of risk in between, which is creating like any design and which is not addressing any operational needs, or the marketing team is creating some user needs, and if they're not able to design very well an architectural team, they cannot transfer developers. It's creating a lot of risk in between. So it's not only getting an operation and developer together, it's more than that. If you look at much closer in the software project, it's really a complex thing, software project. There are a lot of subcomponents into software, things like programming, updates, and business constraints, legal issues, marketing needs, data privacy. There are many. We can throw many other quality attributes into the software projects. So if you look at closer, then we can group them by expertise. So like developer expertise can be combined, some of them, which is the main things of programming. That can be IT operation expertise, so that can get scalable infrastructure needs. Or that can be a quality assurance expertise, so technical documentation, release and user manual, user documentations, that requiring some quality teams together. So, or can be a business analysis expertise, which there was one of the questions was asking about for the legal issues or the marketing needs or the some sort of like business constraints. That's me requiring a lot of expertise over there. So if you look at overall things, and even for information security expertise, the goal is really get in that work-wise, get expertise into the project. So when the project is really kicked in, all expertise can say their inputs depends on the where they are in the project. So maybe at the beginning, a lot of business constraints, they're going to get their inputs at the beginning. And same thing for scalability. Throughout the development cycles, once they see the where are they going all the project-wise, and information security folks can add security at the beginning or during the process instead of waiting at the end to some security analysis or to some intrusion detection at the end. So they can do at the beginning or during the throughout the process.
Because
so
it's too late at the end.
Absolutely, it's going to be too late at the end. It's going to cost a lot of money to at the end. And so the goal is really bring them all this expertise as virtually together. So and when they come virtually together, they can give their feedbacks and inputs. So that's the main purpose of the DevOps thinking and philosophy behind that. So it's not only the operational team, it's not only the dev, it's all together. It's all together which is sharing the same goal as business aspect. Sharing the same goals means we have to get a good quality of software and it has the business need which is addressed properly so we can increase our business values about it. The other things also we have to touch about, we are talking so far, we're not replacing the operational team. We are getting the operational team needs. So if you think about any software development process, it is requiring a lot of decision maker and operational team needs to give their inputs. So it's a typical software development process, which is starting from early stage and inception, which is getting some sort of requirements at the beginning and also the project requirements at the end. So these are the like very key point, and when we do the requirements gathering or when we do some sort of design, operational team, they have to give their inputs, so like how many users, what's the payment methods, and who's going to be targeting the market, or other things like what's going to be OS, what type of ports we have to use. So if the operational team or the production, the maintenance team, they approve some sort of OS, and developer will going to use that OS which is verified. Otherwise, and like very typical examples, developer, they're going to use Ubuntu. If the operational team will say, no, we're going to use a CentOS OS, so they have to know at the beginning, which is operational team inputs. So it's really to have operational team input every stage, it makes much more effective throughout the cycles.
Right, so there's a lot of decision points.
Absolutely.
Right? And if you don't have those operations experts there during those decision points, you'll make a decision that might not meet production needs, and that's exactly what we're trying to avoid.
So at the end of the things, like if you look at overall things, project can be delivered, but project can be delivered in how much and what's the way. The goal is getting operational team together, let them straight path instead of going zigzag way and go back and forth changing. So let operational team be involved, get their inputs at the beginning, they get their decision make at the beginning so we can go straight to our project deliverables.
Right, which and throughout the process, out, right?
Throughout the
let
process.
Operations guide development.
Right. It's going to be completely visible throughout the process so that operational team can guide it. DevOps is not taking their jobs. DevOps is really getting operational team work together along with other team members throughout the software development
right,
process.
Right, exactly, as you said. Whoever those experts are, those experts all need to be guiding the software development process.
Right.
And it's not that we wouldn't necessarily get to the end goal at the end. We might hit the same goal, but we want to get to that goal faster and cheaper, and you know, more efficiently. So having that expert guidance is just going to make all that real-time feedback, get those decisions to be decided correctly, right? And the first time, and have faster turnaround to get into market. And this is where you see all those, the statistics and the improvements in getting features to market faster. Because you have that guidance, and because you have then the levels of automation that allow you to check and make sure that guidance is all followed, because you codify it, then you see turnaround of features to market much, much, much faster because there's not that ambiguity that always exists with, well, does it actually do what the business needs? And you have to ask everybody in the
getting
business.
Getting all the quality attributes during the early process. Operational team can really help them get the security at the beginning, get the security aware of the what should be the design and addressing the all the security needs, including SQL injection, some other things as well. So during that process, instead of really waiting at the end of the penetration testing at the end, let them involve the early stage, which is operational team can give their inputs as early stage, which is that DevOps is expecting like that.
Right. We all say it has to be done. Right. You have to consider security throughout the entire lifecycle, but it's very hard to do, and DevOps gives us ways to do that.
Right.
And the last thing we have, what DevOps is not. It is not just continuous delivery. We have a poll here as well.
Okay, so that poll and question you're going to see pop up now is asking, does your organization hope to achieve continuous delivery? While you're responding to that poll, I just wanted to remind everybody that there is a files tab. We're getting a lot of questions about if this is being archived and the slides are available from the presentation. You'll see a files tab on your webinar console that you can download the slides here now. It is being archived. We'll send out information most likely tomorrow at some point with an email of where to access the archive as well. So let's look at these results here. And we have a 73% saying yes, they hope to achieve continuous delivery.
Okay, so we have an advanced audience here, which is great to hear. First, I just want to go into a few definitions of what continuous delivery and what continuous deployment are, because a lot of people, a lot of organizations, I've seen confusion over the definitions. Continuous deployment is what we think of when we think of Amazon or Flickr deploying dozens, hundreds of times a day. That is when changes are deployed automatically into production immediately. Developer develops feature goes immediately through an automatic pipeline into production. That is continuous deployment. Continuous delivery is something slightly different. Continuous delivery just deploys automatically all of the features into an environment that is production-like, a staging environment that has high amounts of parity to production. Continuous delivery is defined by getting the product into a state where we are extremely confident that it could be deployed into actual production, but not necessarily deploying it into actual production. And these concepts are different because different organizations have different needs. A number of organizations I've talked to have been concerned because they're a little bit hesitant, a little bit scared about the concept of continuous deployment. And this can be for a number of reasons. One, maybe we don't think we can get there. That's worrisome to have any developer be able to push a change into production. Or maybe we're in a highly regulated environment. We need to do security checks. We need to do regulatory checks before we push out there. We simply can't do this. And then the conclusion is, well, we can't do DevOps because we can't do continuous deployment. And that's absolutely not true. DevOps is at the heart, as we've said a number of times, to be designed specifically to meet your business needs. So if frequent deployments give you a competitive edge, excellent. Focus on continuous delivery, move on to continuous deployment because that's going to provide your business value. But look at your individual business, look at your environment, and say, is that what gives us the competitive edge? If not, ask the hard question, what would give us a competitive edge in our market? And direct all of your DevOps efforts toward meeting those goals. It is not always continuous deployment, though it can be a very powerful competitive edge in a number of markets.
I think we can go to question and session if there's any question.
Okay, we have got a ton of questions. I think we're going to have to bring you guys in just to do a question and answer session.
That'd be great.
So we'll get into that now. So let's dive right in. One from John asking, in a larger organization, what level of management sponsorship is needed to successfully break down silos and implement DevOps?
That's a hard question because in a lot of cases, you know, my ideal answer is complete. DevOps works best when there is complete organizational buy-in because ultimately you need everybody in the organization to feel free to communicate, to collaborate, to share information, and not to worry about whether that's going to have any repercussions or ramifications. And that needs to be not only supported but sometimes enforced to build that culture. That's one of the trickiest parts.
That's actually requiring some top-down and bottom approach. So the bottom people like developers, they have to have some sort of understanding, the philosophy, they know what they're going on. And the management team, they can measure it. If the management team knows how much money they're saving having a DevOps, they're going to jump on the board immediately, which is the C-level people. They can see what's really going on. They can get their buy-in. And developers or engineer operational team, other team members, they know what is really DevOps means. So it's kind of like all together, bottom up, top down. So they're going to get in the middle, in a central place that can really share and then continue like that.
The other thing you see is that, well, we said you need that expertise in business needs, right? You need to know exactly what metrics and things are going to provide you business value. Well, who knows that? And that's usually the upper level management, the executive. So they need to be a part of this. They're stakeholders and they're experts. And that expertise has to be worked in or you're not going to hit your targets.
Okay, great. From Steve asking, how can we shift the thinking / culture of an operations team who is reluctant to put new releases into production because their primary goal is maintaining high uptime?
I can address actually. The operational team, if they have a really complete understanding how that is going to help for them, they're going to say, okay, I should get it right away. Because that's the primary goal is to keep them uptime, right? Because when they're getting some production, it's up and running. But if the operational team gets as completely tested, which is they're already aware of it, they know already at the beginning, they know what is coming to their shops, they know in and out everything. So developers are already engaged with the operation instead of really handing wash and say, okay, that's not my responsibility, it's your responsibility, which is a problem here. So operational team will get more helpful, more benefits having DevOps like that.
Right. It's about that consistency. You know, my answer would be that operational team, what it sounds like to me is that high availability, that uptime is a very important quality attribute to your organization. Assuming that's an organizational directive, then that's important to know. So the way I would go about that is to start developing DevOps processes, automated deployments, automated systems to go into a staging environment. And when operations gets comfortable seeing that staging environment has really high uptime, that it doesn't take us a long time to push that deployment, these deployments are not failing, that they're not causing any...
Or ability to rollback, that's another thing.
Right,
it's
right.
It's a key point, rollback.
Automated rollback, seeing that when we do a deployment, if there was a failure, it automatically rolls back to the last version. You see no hiccups in uptime. When they see that, they will adopt it. But, you know, it is a valid concern to say, hey, uptime is very important for us. And these deployments, you know, every time you go for a deployment, it takes a system offline for 20 minutes. No, they're not going to want to do that multiple times a day. But I think it's all about proving the capability. And then that capability can roll into actual production, delivery before deployment.
Great. Just before we get to the next question, just a quick reminder, everybody, that to click on that survey tab before exiting, as your feedback is always greatly appreciated and how we can improve our events here at the SCI. Question from Ray asking, any examples of challenging managers to work across lines, i.e. outside their own organization? Once again, any examples of challenging managers to work across lines, for example, outside their own organization?
Which is a contracting shop, basically. It's a good example. The contracting, which one organization is contracting another organization, maybe for a couple of reasons. They can have their own development teams, they may be outsourcing some of the development modules to somebody else, which is another challenge over there. So DevOps is going to bring them, again, the same philosophies that share together using the collaboration portals. And if the management team knows to monitor it, all the process, all the development process, it's going to be much easier for them to control it. That's managing buy-in over there, I can add it.
And sometimes it comes down to what, how people are, how they're measured, how they're monitored, right? What are the incentives in your business? So how are those managers' performance measured, and what does that mean for your organization? And sometimes you have to look at that. If they aren't incentivized to work across, it may be because they're managed in different ways, and that has to be addressed and looked at to give them those shared goals. Managers need the shared goals just as much as the technical folks.
Okay. Folks, I know we're at 2:30. We're going to take one more question, and I just want to remind everybody before we go into that last question to make sure you look into the Files tab. You're going to see a lot of great resources in there. The CERT DevOps team here recently started a blog series for the last, I think, 5 or 6 weeks, a bunch of great posts. That you'll see a file there that will take you to those blog posts. Aaron is co-instructing a course at Saturn 2015 on continuous integration and DevOps. So if you're in the Baltimore, D.C. area, or if DevOps and continuous integration is an area of interest, be sure to look at that course. But these are all materials you can walk away with today. So last question we'll wrap up with is from Dan asking, does a DevOps group make sense for a software vendor with many software products as a means of enforcing a common DevOps approach across product teams in desperate and separate locations?
So that's interesting. So does a DevOps team, an independent team, you're saying, make sense when you have a lot of different products? So, you know, we operate in a world like that. We have a lot of different projects going on simultaneously, and we have a pretty robust DevOps solution because of that, to keep things in line. So the idea of keeping things in line makes a lot of sense. But the question is, what are the roles within the projects of that DevOps team? Are they infrastructure engineers? Are they developers? What are they doing and how are they engaging? Or are you just talking about somebody that oversees process and advises on process? I think what Hassan had said before, the concept of a virtual team, the concept of matrixing makes a lot of sense in that context. If you get everybody to have buy-in, you know, say all the infrastructure people get together in a matrix team and decide on how the DevOps workflow should work, that can make some sense.
Actually, like a couple other things as well here. Based on the Gartner research, in 2016 will be a DevOps year, what research says that. One of the things, it's confusing part, DevOps is not to be discussed that, DevOps is not a product, but there are a lot of things which is DevOps-enabled tools, DevOps-enabled process, DevOps-enabled projects. We have to think that way.
That's
DevOps-enabled, so that means you can do something as DevOps kind of makes you to help, not really as the group, not as a team, not as a product, it's enabled. So that means it's a process that my work or my project is going to be compatible with what I'm thinking, that I can achieve the goals. That's
right.
Really key point. We have to think about that.
And one thing I will advise is that most processes, specifically DevOps processes, do work a lot better when there is input from the front lines on that. If you just, you know, externally create a DevOps process and then just try to place it down and force it across all of your developers, all of your infrastructure people, you will get kickback, and you will not get full engagement and buy-in in that from below, and you're going to need that as well. The project teams are the experts in what their projects need. So getting them to be involved in designing the DevOps process is going to yield benefits, not only because the process will be better, but because they will be engaged in it and have ownership in it, so they will then enforce it themselves.
Okay, folks, that is going to wrap up our presentation for today. Again, thank you for attending. We apologize for the technical difficulties at the beginning. But again, this will be archived for anybody that missed anything at the beginning. The link will be sent out tomorrow. And we apologize also for any questions we didn't get to. There's lots of great questions left in the queue, so we make sure we'll get them to Aaron and Hassan and their team to review and hopefully get a response out to you that way. Thanks, everyone. Have a great day.